This is the Bears Barroom Radio Network. The following program is recorded live and intended for all audiences.
Radio is scripted now. We just come up with it. We don't use computers. We don't rehearse. We're going to talk about this next. We're going to talk about them. We're going to talk about the Bulls. And then we're going to have Brad Bigson. And then we're going to have all this. No. No. If you don't know what you're going to talk about in the top of your head before a show, you shouldn't be in the business. I don't know what you got. I feel like Vince Vaughn in a couple's retreat. The sharks are circling. Old school, baby.
You're listening to the Mike North Advantage, and it begins right now.
That's right. The Mike North Advantage starts right now. I am Aldo Gandia, Mike's wingman, and we've got quite the show for you tonight. And why not? Chicago sports are on a high. The White Sox are trying for their third straight win as we speak. The Chicago Cubs are trying for their fourth straight win, and 7 out of 8, they are red hot. And if you haven't heard, the Bears had quite the weekend celebrating their 100th anniversary. We'll talk about that. And, of course, we'll preview that NBA Finals game coming up later tonight. But first and foremost, Mike has a very, very special guest. He'll introduce him, and I will say this. Mike North, how are you, my friend?
Good, Aldo. We'll talk in a few minutes, buddy. I know you have some questions for our next guest as far as the chat board, too, because get the chat room going, because, folks, we're going to have a very interesting show tonight. We've had people on from Jimbo Covert to Hawk Harrelson to Jesse Rogers to Andy Furman to Jonas Knox to Chris Sorge. I said, you know what? We had some news today that wasn't very good for a big poppy, if you will, David Ortiz. And the first guy I thought about is a guy I've known for 25, 30 years. I can't believe how fast it's grown. I met him when I was at the Score. He was involved heavily, still is, with USA Baseball. He's been a successful coach for the international teams in all varieties, all age groups, if you will. One of the best baseball men I know. But he's traveled to over 30 countries. You can catch him at Baseball Outside the Box podcast, at Baseball Out, BaseballOut. Give him a follow. I always do. It's always interesting when he goes, hey, I'm in Cuba, or hey, I'm in Italy, or hey, I'm in Bulgaria, giving a baseball clinic. And he's devoted his life to the game. Probably has made a little money, but he's probably cost himself a lot of money because he's a bright guy, could have been a manager, could have been a chief executive, devoting his time to his country. It's Pete Caliendo. What's up, Pete?
Mike, how are you? Thanks for having me on. Excited about this, man.
Well, I was excited, too, because I know if anybody knows about the perils of travel, we're going to talk about coaching and what you've been doing and how things vary from country to country. But as soon as I found out about David Ortiz, the first guy I thought about was my good friend Pete Caliendo, because I know you've been everywhere from Russia to Cuba to Venezuela. You've been everywhere, and I'm sure you've met up with dangers, and I'm sure there are certain things that you have to watch out for. But I wanted you on, too, to tell people. I heard somebody say today, well, it could happen anywhere. Yeah, but there's a percentage, okay? Maybe the percentage it happens to an athlete in this country is very low. I don't care what anybody says. A percentage, as we found from people that have gone back home after they make riches, have been kidnappings and murder and everything else. Where are the percentages overseas, especially in Latin American countries, compared to maybe the United States, Canada, and other such places?
You know, Mike, first of all, just prayers to Poppy's, you know, family. Hopefully everything's going well. And you know, the news sounds good, so hopefully everything goes well with him. But, you know, there's always a risk. And, you know, when you're talking about Latin America, you know, just check out Venezuela. Right now, it's unfortunately what's sad news in Venezuela. It's a mess there. And obviously, it's more dangerous. And when you have third world countries that, you know, there's more poor people, then it just happens to be riskier. So you have to take precautions. And there's a lot more risk, as you know, you just mentioned it, with people that have a lot of money. I know the players in Dominican Republic that have got security guards when they play. I know one player, I remember they're talking about Tejada. He used to have a helicopter that flew in Santiago from his house to the stadium back to his house because of the risks of kidnapping. You know, families have to be protected. I mean, those are just the facts of life in some of these countries, especially when you have a lot of money.
Yeah, because, you know, as I was reading today, I looked up some statistics, and I know this happened in Santo Domingo, and the crime is up 79% over the last 3 years. So I just talked to two people that came back from the Dominican about 3 weeks ago. They said it's a beautiful country, but it's corrupt and dirty. And they had an okay time. They had been there, or they had talked to people that had been there before that seemed to have a better time. So are things changing, like Venezuela, for instance? Are there other Venezuelas, are other countries that you used to go to 15 years ago getting in bad shape as we speak?
You know, I don't know if the actual, you know, the countries are doing, they're trying to do their best, but there's corruption in the governments, and the people are just not getting, you know, what they should be getting. Now, you know, we can look at Cuba. Cuba is completely different. It's one of the safest countries you can be in, and everything's controlled by the government. The baseball is controlled by the government, and it's very safe there. But in the Dominican Republic, I've been there 10, 20 times. It's just a fact that you've got to be careful if you're going to go out in the evenings, you know, depending where you go, what city you're in. You know, a place like Santo Domingo is so big. There's a large population. Where I go in Santiago, we're downtown. There's smaller hotels. There's security. You know, we take baseball teams to play. We take players, you know, 15, 16 years old. But we're cautious. We're out during the day. You know, we're playing games. When we're back in the evenings, we don't leave the hotel, obviously, in the evenings. It's just we play it safe. So, yeah, you just have to be careful everywhere you go. And it's unfortunate, but it's life. And you just have to take certain precautions.
Yeah, there have been guys that have been kidnapped. Ivan Calderon was murdered. And back in the day, former Chicago White Sox, it's been happening all over. It would be hard for me. And I know he was in a public bar, but now there's rumors. I mean, that there might have been somebody's wife or girlfriend. I want to wait till all the facts. Like, all I know is this was a targeted deal. He's supposed to be out of the wood, hopefully. So we hope that things will get better for Big Papi. Let's talk about you, and let's talk about what you're doing right now. I read an article in the Herald. You've been to Cuba recently. You seem to like that country. As far as baseball is concerned, they are headstrong when it comes to baseball. It's not like some of these other places like Bulgaria that you've been to and others that I follow you in, where you have to introduce the game. They already know about the game, don't they?
Oh, they know it well, boy. I mean, think about it. And I was really shocked because I've been there 9 times. And this is the first time that I actually traveled the whole country teaching courses. And I was honored because I was actually the first American prior to the revolution or after the revolution to actually give a course throughout Cuba. And they've given in the last 20 years, just to give you an example, our organized there, they've given over 322 courses throughout their country to their coaches. That's how important coaching is to them. But they're also, you know, they're not as backwards as we think they might be because of the technology. They don't have as much technology as we do, but the Federation runs all the baseball there. It's very organized. They've got academies in 16 regions. And they only have, this is the shocking part, which I thought they had a lot more. I was wrong. They have 60,000 players in their country, and yet they're producing some of the better players around the world. They've competed internationally. You know, they dominated international baseball for many years. Now they're sending guys to the major leagues, and they've only got 60,000 players. That's all ages. Well, that tells us that their professional level has to be pretty good. If their players can come here and compete at our level, at the major league level, their pro league has to be pretty good, and also their training has to be pretty good. Now, they've got certain technologies. You know, they understand the launch angle and some of the things that are coming in nowadays as far as baseball is concerned, but they're also trying to learn constantly, and that's what really makes them good. And that's why I like Cuba, because they're just a good baseball country. They got passion for the game. They do it for the right reasons, and they're extremely organized.
And it's a way for them to get out, Pete, but also to make millions of dollars. We've seen it now. Hopefully things will improve with Cuba and the U.S. I know that things were starting to change under the past administration. Now the new administration, there's some maybe things that are changing. Again, it happens with every administration. But I want to talk to you about the coaching that they do in Cuba and in the Latin American countries that make these kids become better than their American counterparts in a lot of ways. It's harsher, isn't it? I mean, they humiliate the kids sometimes, don't they, in front of the fans and everything if they screw up.
That's a great question. I'll tell you why. They are a little tougher at times on some of the players. As they get a little older, not as tough on the younger kids. But I'll tell you what they do and the mistake that we're making in the U.S. with our kids. First of all, some of our kids, as you know, are entitled, and they have a hard time dealing with failure. But their kids, you know, what's interesting is that they practice a lot. Now, you obviously they've got the weather. They play all year round. But we think that they play all the time, and that's all they do is play games. No, actually, they practice more than they play. And as you know, being from Chicago, we're now doing the opposite. We're playing a lot more games. We're playing 100 games with kids that are 10 years old.
I loved practice, and I loved trying to get better that way. And it seems like, throughout, even in the National Football League, even in the pros, you know, even in basketball, the NBA, once the regular season starts, they have very few practices. They just play the games.
Yeah, and Mike, you know, because you grew up playing baseball and you know the game well, you know, you've got to practice. I mean, you know, you might be able to get a little bit of the way at the major league level because they play 165 games. There's only so much time they can practice during the season. But our kids now aren't even practicing during the season. Now, you know, now we're talking about not only are you not maintaining your skills, but now if you don't maintain your strength or flexibility, you can get hurt throughout the season because of the fact that you're not maintaining your skills. And you and I used to go out and play on our own. We don't do that anymore. We used to play lob league or against the wall at the school, you know, with a rubber ball and play all day. And that was practice, too. Yes,
yeah,
absolutely. We need to get back to that.
Yeah, you know what? We're with Pete Caliendo here on Bears Barroom, the Mike North Advantage. Eldo will be up with us, Eldo Gandia, in just a few minutes to get some questions from you on the chat board. Out of all the countries that you've been to, what country doesn't grasp the game so far? I mean, I know you're great at what you do, but at some point, I've seen the places you've gone. I think you've gone everywhere but the Antarctic. I think there's some people that can grasp the game and some people would rather you go away. What was one of the places you thought or you felt maybe that they wish you'd go away?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's not the country that wishes that we go away. It might be the other sports because, you know, like in Europe, soccer's real big. Well, they don't want baseball around, you know, because they want kids to play soccer a lot. And I'll be honest with you, Mike, most countries, I mean, all the countries I've been to, they love the game. Once we introduce it to them, or once they introduce the sport to the schools, and the kids love it. Now, how they introduce it is a whole different ballgame. If you introduce baseball in another country, whether it's a European country, say Eastern Europe, or whether it's Pakistan where they play, you know, cricket, if you introduce the sport, the whole sport, like the game of baseball, they're not going to enjoy it because kids are not going to have any fun with, you know, when you're playing nine players on the field and you don't touch the ball very often. But if you introduce a sport like a 5-on-5 baseball game for young kids where the action is constant, now they love it and then they can graduate to the baseball game. So that's how we try to attract them by making the game smaller.
You know, the launch angle BS drives me crazy. The OPS drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I think batting average is still very important. I don't care if you're paying a guy $300 million like Bryce Harper, of course you want him to walk. But if you're paying him $300 to predominantly walk and he's hitting .240, and, you know, I know he's going to come up with some big hits. I think the biggest change and the thing that's got to drive you nuts as a coach is it's either all or nothing. In other words, if I don't hit the ball out of the park, if I strike out, which used to be an embarrassment when we were kids, I hated going back to the dugout if that happened. Or hated walking back with people watching after you struck out. Now they just walk back like it's a walk in the park. Has that been the biggest change?
Yeah, it has the biggest change. It has the biggest effect on young players because sometimes, you know, you've got experts out there. Yes, they might be a Hall of Famer and they say, you know, well, here's how I swung. Well, that's not really how they swung. And they misinterpreted a little bit. So now kids are trying to, you know, swing under more and their launch angle is so high, they don't have the power to hit the ball out of the park. We need to make sure that they're hitting line drives constantly. Wouldn't you want players, like you said, I'd want a player that's hitting 300 on base percentage high, you know, hitting line drives, doubles in the gap. If I got nine of those guys, you know, who also battle at home plate and give, you know, make the pitcher throw a lot of pitches, I'd rather have nine of those guys than nine guys that are hitting home runs, but they're doing it once every so many at bats.
I just don't understand some of the thinking. I mean, I'm watching in basketball, Kawhi Leonard's taking over because he's rediscovered the mid-range two-pointer when everybody's shooting from three and missing. The same thing goes for baseball. I'd rather have six guys that hit between 280 and 310 that will hit 20 home runs and drive in over 65 or 70 runs in my lineup than the two, three guys that are the big boppers that half the time walk back to the dugout. I mean, they walk back. They take more walks during the game than they do probably when they're out with their wife. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what, I think it's going to come around. What's going to happen, I think teams are going to start to realize, because, you know, a couple teams, Houston and Boston, and even you look at the Chicago Cubs, Joe Maddon, you know, they're starting to teach guys to hit the other way, to hit to the whole parts of the field. So I think the game's going to start changing as you start seeing some of these teams winning who have players who can hit the ball all over the place.
You know what else I'm seeing now, Pete, and I watch baseball every night. In fact, I'm watching the Pittsburgh-Atlanta game right now. And what's funny is that I'm seeing now with all this concentration, media BS about launch angle, we're seeing more high pitches now. Because
absolutely,
a lot of these hitters are programmed to uppercut, and now I'm seeing pitchers like Hendricks last night. I'm watching him. I think the launch angle's been his savior. The fact that he can throw 90-plus high with movement has now made that lower pitch even more potent, because these guys are still uppercutting when he's throwing the ball above the waist.
Absolutely, and you know, that's a great point, because I'll tell you this. I saw Hendricks last night also, and he struck out Goldschmidt on an 88-mile-an-hour fastball up high. Now, 88 miles an hour up high. Why? Because there's a difference visually when the ball's up high. It actually looks a little bit faster, and they, you know, sometimes they have a hard time timing it when it's up high, and you add the launch angle. And now you have a guy like Hendricks who can you know, spot the ball and change it up. I mean, he's masterful, and he's got 10 to 12 strikeouts a game at times. People say, well, you have to throw hard to strike, you know, guys out. Well, you don't nowadays, because if you understand effective velocity, which is, you know, hitting spots, different location, changing speeds, you can get a lot of hitters out. And I think you're going to start seeing that too. Hitters are going to have to start making an adjustment if they're going to get pitched up high. And that's not easy, because you got to train for that.
I can't believe I saw a shift last night on the guy where the third baseman was playing deep shortstop, and he didn't even try to hit the ball to the left side. And now at least I'm seeing Rizzo and some other guys who, let's face it, I don't know. What do you think about the shift? Because I think the game was designed for third, short, second, first. And I know that you – it's sort of like, to me – letting three defensive linemen line up off sides to get closer to the quarterback or to get him at his strength. I've always thought it should stay that way, that the second baseman can't go past the bag towards short or vice versa. You have to have two on each side. I think it's hurt the game. They're looking for more offense. If you outlaw the shift, Pete, then I think you'll have the offense that you want, but the way it's going now, you've got some guys that will never try to differ. They're just going to try to swing for the fences, and they're going to hit their 260s with their 20 home runs.
You know, and that's what I love about you, Mike, is you love the challenge of status quo. And I mean, right now the status quo is the shift. And if the hitters don't make the adjustment, you know, then we're going to have to do something about it. But really the hitters, you know, the team should be training the minor league players right away, hitting the ball all over, wherever the ball is pitched.
Right.
If it's pitched away, you know, hit it away. If it's pitched in the middle, hit it up the middle. Then you wouldn't have to worry, because they're going to have to play it straight up. But because of what's happened, yeah, the game, to make it a little bit more exciting, you know, we may have to have some guidelines where you can't just place five guys. You saw Mann the other day. He put, four guys on the right side between first and second base.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, Pete's going to give us, and before we go to the chat board, Pete, and with Eldo, tell us what you're doing now. Tell us about the podcast and everything else.
Well, thanks, Mike. You know, again, I got baseballoutsidethebox.com. I love doing it. It's, you know, I have baseball experts from around the world, you know, that love the challenge. It's the status quo about what the game's doing, and we teach coaches and instructional stuff on the actual podcast. And then I'm doing a tip of the month day every day on YouTube, you know, and Facebook. All you got to do is go to Peter Caliendo and you check it, you know, all my tips out on YouTube. And I continue to, you know, we're working on seminars all over the world. We do about 14, 15 seminars around the world. And I'll have a couple teams competing this summer. We're heading to Japan, my favorite country for baseball, and then Italy also. And that's, as you know, you know, my favorite country overall after the United States of America.
I would test you right. By the way, Ronald Acuña Jr. has just hit a grand slam off Pittsburgh. Oh. So now it's Atlanta 4, Pittsburgh 1, still in the bottom of the second. He just opened up. That kid can play some baseball. And now we bring on our guy, Eldo Gandia. Eldo, Pete Kelly, I'm the one interesting guy. I've been to over 30 countries, my friend.
It's unbelievable. Pete, have you ever been to Puerto Rico, where my hometown of Lares and Rio Piedras, and checked out the baseball talent there?
Aldo, absolutely. I've been there 3-4 times. Actually, with players from the U.S., we went there to compete in a couple tournaments, and, you know, loved going to Puerto Rico. Obviously, great weather, yeah. Great baseball, and you're seeing the sport develop more and more there, because at a certain point there, baseball was dropping a little bit, but now it's up on the rise again.
Oh, good to hear. Good to hear. All right, we've got a question from Hart4803. He's got a great question about African-American participation in baseball. Why do you think there's been a drop-off over the last 2 or 3 decades, and what can be done to attract more athletes to baseball?
You know, great question. One, you know, I mean, it's all about finances. You know, baseball is an expensive game, and you know, nowadays every kid's playing travel baseball, and travel baseball is expensive. So not only is the equipment expensive, but travel baseball is. So that's why I like what the White Sox have done. They've got, you know, some teams that are travel teams, the Aces. And they've developed some good players. The kids, you know, I believe don't pay that much. I think the White Sox support it completely. I think we need more funding for the inner cities to be able to give kids an opportunity, especially at the higher levels, to be, not higher, when I say higher, I said more competitive kids, to be able to showcase themselves. Because these young kids can't go to showcases. So that's the other issue. And then at the younger levels, you know, we need to introduce the sport more into those areas and help finance some of the leagues. I think that's, and we've got the money to be, major league teams have the money to be able to help. Some of them are doing it. We just need to increase that a lot more.
Yeah, you travel around, for instance, the city of Chicago, and you just don't see baseball diamonds like you used to, and particularly
no.
In the inner city. And so we need to build some solid, good-looking baseball diamonds, and will attract youngsters of every race. That's my opinion on that one. Another question for you, something that I just actually learned about. Last year, the Tampa Bay Rays started this kind of designated opener for baseball games. They basically get a relief pitcher going in the first couple of innings. I think it was Sergio Romo who saw a lot of those starts. Pitch the reliever for 2 innings and then get your starter for 6 innings. And is this a trend that we could see grow in baseball, or is this was just a fad come and gone?
You know, I don't know 100%. I mean, it's you're seeing, you know, as you know, you've seen relievers coming in a lot of early, closers. You've seen them in the 6th inning, 7th inning.
Yeah,
I understand.
They're bringing in 5 or 6 guys over a 9-inning game.
And you know where that helps, Mike? That helps at the high school levels, at even the college levels, because, you know, you only have so many pitchers and you were trying to develop more pitchers. So, you know, and you can, you know, you can throw guys in 3 innings, 2 innings, 3 innings. And that way kids are more consistent, and because otherwise they're sitting on the bench and not pitching any games at all for a week. And then you expect them to pitch and it's really hard. So you're seeing the game change. They're all worried about, you know, the arm injuries, and those arm injuries aren't happening at the major league level. They're happening at the young levels. So a lot of it has to do with that. So there's a concern there. So yeah, the game's changing a little bit. So I don't know if you're going to see that shift as much coming in that early, but you're definitely seeing 2, 3, 4 pitchers a game. And I think you'll continue to see that unless they, you know, make some rules, as they've made a couple of rules. I think one rule with you have to pitch the 3 batters at least.
Right. Well, and Mike and I have talked about this on a couple of shows. Why aren't we seeing complete games like we used to when we were younger? I mean, I remember Ferguson Jenkins for the Cubs having over 20 complete games. We just don't see that in baseball anymore. What's happened?
You know, I got to believe that, you know, the agents, you know, the players' unions getting involved. That's the only thing I can think about, is they're trying to overprotect these guys, you know, to make sure that they're more successful. And so they're, you know, they're forcing the hand of the managers and the teams to be able to protect them a little bit more so they can last longer. It's the only thing I can think of, because, you know, why, you know, and then the other thing, you've heard this, you know, you're seeing, you know, statistically, that's where analytics comes in. You know, I guess their analytics shows that if you're facing a guy the third time around, that they're harder to, you know, to get out, and the pitcher's struggling a little bit more. So I think that depends on the pitcher. Now, early on, I'm a big believer, you know, after spring training, the first month, yeah, I think you need to work them up into a certain amount till they complete a full game. I know the question is, if you're throwing a no-hitter the first month, you know, you're going to pull them out, which that's happened before in the seventh inning where they pulled out no-hitter. So I think safety is a big issue. You know, the area they need to address, really more important, is the pitching that's going on at the younger levels, because that's where the injuries are occurring, because the kids are pitching way too much, and they're not, as Mike and I talked about, they're not practicing enough. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, again, they're having those major injuries starting early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the White Sox especially, they've been hit with a couple of big pitchers that they're counting on down the line.
Oh,
they've had some
big
injuries. Yeah, it's big that they've lost some of their prospects. And when you start getting injured like that at an early age, and you know, you start to age quickly as far as baseball years are concerned. Pete, you have a Baseball Outside the Box podcast. You got all sorts of people. Give them a follow at Baseball Out. Buddy, it was a wealth of knowledge, and I appreciate it.
Mike, thank you. Aldo, thank you.
Thank
God bless you guys. And Mike, say hi to BB, as always. You guys are fantastic.
Anytime I do it, you still doing the real estate?
She is, yeah. Real estate made easy, absolutely.
All right, buddy, we got it in. We got the budget. Tell her I said hello, okay?
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Take care.
All right, that's...
All right, bye-bye. I will.
One of the top guys, one of the top coaches in baseball, amateur baseball, in this country over the last 20, 25 years. And, Aldo, I got to tell you, you know, the big story of the day is Big Papi, and it looks to me like he was targeted.
Oh,
he
my
wasn't
goodness.
Robbed
yeah.
or anything like that. He was targeted. We're hearing rumors. I'd like to hear more.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this. People are saying he's one of the most beloved, if not the beloved Red Sox. Some people say he is the most beloved Boston athlete. A lot of people think that. And I'll be the first to say that if he was messing around with a drug lord's wife or mistress, he's one of the dumbest people in Boston baseball history. Outside of that, because this guy walked right in, looked at him, said, that's him, and shot him in the back, man.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered. Hopefully, we'll get more. I don't know if we'll ever get the full story, but I know there's more to the story than people are talking about already.
Yeah, well, given his popularity, especially on the East Coast, where it's kind of the news capital of the world, I bet you there's swarms of reporters headed down there to dig up details. It's just a matter. I'm not familiar at all with the Dominican Republic government and how friendly they are to the media there. They might try to suppress a lot of information if there are some other countries that I'm more familiar with. We'll see, but there's definitely a story there. This was a targeted shooting. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And hopefully he's going to make a full recovery. I heard the bullet went through the liver and they had to remove a portion of his intestine. So that's pretty serious stuff. And hopefully it's not going to be debilitating to him and he can lead a good, clean life. Stay out of trouble.
Yeah, you're going to be able to lead a good, clean life too after this wedding is over with that. You're like the wedding planner. You're Martin Short. I mean, yeah. I know you're the father of the bride. When is the wedding, my friend?
The wedding is July 20th, and it's going to be one hellacious party. I'll tell you what, my future son-in-law, he brought his groomsmen with him. So there was about 45 women and 5 or 6 guys. I took those guys down to the man cave. They fell in love with my setup down here. We had a few shots. We had a few laughs. We had a good time. And then we went back up and mingled with the women. It was a great, great bridal shower. And thanks very much for Mike for bringing that up.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the picture on Twitter. They're going to be a very nice. They're going to be a happy couple, and then you know what? Believe me when I tell you this, folks. Believe me when I tell you this. It's the best. You find the right people. It's the best.
Yep. It is.
Your marriage is. It's all that if you have the right girl, and I got the right girl, thank God. So you know, and a lot of my buddies do too. You know. People, all you ever hear about is the breakups on the news. You don't hear about the millions of people that have been married forever, right?
That's
ever.
Right. That is right.
And man, I've been married forever. Sorry, B, I know you're listening. I'm just saying. I'm not saying. So we got basketball. What do we want to start with?
Well, let's start with a little NBA basketball because tip-off is in about 30-40 minutes or so, and I want to talk to you about, you know, this very, very important game tonight, because the Golden State Warriors have their backs up against the wall. And Steph Curry, he was on the ESPN show The Jump, and he was asked, what are the chances of the Warriors coming back and winning the series, by Rachel Nichols. Here's a clip.
I think you have to dumb it down to, how do you win one game? Win game five. And that's all we can control right now. If we really lock into that 48 minutes and everybody who steps on the floor literally just, that is the most important 48 minutes of our life. You know, we can put ourselves in a much better position, obviously, and stay alive.
That's the proverbial cliche, you know, just play one game at a time, but it's absolutely correct, Mike. They got to just focus on the next 48 minutes of basketball.
Well, yeah, if they win this game tonight, then the keisters start to get tight for Toronto. Because,
right.
You know, I mean, that's just a natural thing. Leonard, the story is going that I mean, when they played the two in Oakland, the coach Nurse said, let's try to get one here. And Kawhi Leonard said, no, we're going to get both. So that's the attitude they got to have tonight. They don't want to play Golden State in another game. They don't want to play them in another game.
Yeah.
Because if they lose tonight, now you're getting into their territory. I'm the one that said that Durant wouldn't come back at all. But I was also right by saying he wouldn't be back for the Portland series when 80% of the media said he would be.
Right.
That it would be a 7 to 10 day thing. I am stunned that he's coming back. I am stunned that he's going to go out there. I have a whole new outlook on him because I know what kind of injury this is. He's taking a chance tonight.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking a chance tonight because they don't know where that injury is at.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that they've scrimmaged, but he's been careful. I watched him walk the other day. He was walking gingerly. So I'm going to be surprised if he has a super game. And if he's ineffective, I'm going to be surprised that he played. But you know what? I'm glad he's giving it a go. He's got to, if he feels 70%. He's not 100, folks. I'll tell you that. And one day of practice didn't help him. So I got a whole new outlook on Mr. Durant. Doesn't know if it's going to help him or not. Talking about the team. But at least he's going to be there if he's in uniform and he plays. If it's a decoy and he ends up not playing, then it's the same old, but I am stunned he's playing.
Yeah, well, Curry was asked about KD's return, and will KD be able to contribute given that he's missed 30 days and will not, of course, like you said, be 100%. This is what Curry said.
But just with the way our team's constructed and you know, how we bring the best out of each other, you know, having him out there, no matter what percentage he is, what he can give us will definitely help us. And again, we've established, you know, a certain set of a style of play these last 3 years, you know, and we've gotten the job done. So for us, you know, hopefully, you know, when he's back out there, we can, you know, transition back into that and get the job done.
That's the key thing, right, is hopefully capturing that magic that they've had when they were fully healthy, at least capturing a high percentage of that, because they clearly have a superior team when they're at full strength than the Raptors, right?
Well, you know what? He basically just said it a roundabout way that we have to have him back.
Yep.
Even if he gives us 40%, 50%, him out there. So he's basically saying we can't win without him. From what I just read through that whole deal, he says we established a certain way of play the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, okay, so the fact is when he got hurt, they were winning without him. They went 5-1. All of a sudden, they come up against a brick wall called the Toronto Raptors, and now they have established a certain way of playing over the last 3 years. Well, that way of playing went away the last two series because you didn't have Durant.
That's right.
And you won. So in other words, what I think he's saying is, we can beat almost anybody without him. But with Toronto, maybe we can't.
Yeah. And the way I read that, too, is that this is a battered team. I mean, Klay Thompson was not 100% the other night. And
Looney. Looney's been hurt.
Exactly.
First of all, Looney, Cousins, and Bogut have given nothing.
That's right.
To the team.
That's right.
And DeMarcus Cousins, he's a lump. $10 million worth of talent with a 10-cent brain, my opinion.
That's
okay?
Right. That's right.
I mean, he's nothing but a troublemaker everywhere he's been. And when he's played, I mean, the guy, he's out of shape. I understand that. He's giving it a go.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you're going to hurt your team more than help it, get your fat rump off the court. He was a mess the other night. Had no idea what he was doing out there. It's like he hasn't watched any tape. He's just, well, what he was, a sophomore out of college. That, you know, the way he got out. And the same thing goes, Bogut's done. Jarepko stinks. So their depth is not as like it was, and they were a team of frontliners, Beldo, that they can't afford to lose a guy, apparently. And I'll be the first to say that if they end up winning this thing and Durant comes back, then everybody that thought that they were better with Durant was right.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. Now, one last soundbite from Rachel Nichols, the show The Jump. She asked Curry, how was his body after his 47-point performance in Game 3? How was his body in Game 4? In that game, he only had 27 points after that 47-point performance in Game 3. She said, you frankly looked tired in Game 4, and this is what he said.
It's kind of hard to say. I looked at the film and you can see just a little bit of, I don't even know what you want to call it, fatigue or whatever, but just in terms of, like when I'm out there playing, I feel like I can do whatever I want to do and have that burst and that thrust. Just, I miss some shots that I normally make, and on the other side, those guys, you know, all across the board played amazing. Obviously Kawhi leading the charge, so I know I have to play better, more, you know, a little bit more efficient and try to, however many minutes I'm gonna play, leave it all out there.
Mike, I played three sound bites from you from Curry, and he sounds fatigued in all three of them, doesn't he?
You know what? I gotta be honest with you, though.
Uh-huh.
And I mean this. They lost the last game, mm-hmm. And by the way, I had the under in that game, which was a pleasure.
Nice,
105 to 92. But I want to just take a little. I just want to say I don't think he had a bad game.
No, he
went 9-22 from the field in 43 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, he was 2-9 from three. This was the last game. 7-8 from the free throw line. Mm-hmm. He had 6 assists, 4 boards, 27 points. Now, he only had 3 turnovers. The thing I've liked about him is he doesn't turn over the ball. He didn't have a bad game. He just did not have a super game, which he has to have. But him and Thompson, together, Aldo, scored 55 points. Their whole team scored 92. Cousins had 6 points. Iguodala had 3 points. Draymond, the Buster Green, had 10 points. That's where they're having the problems. If Curry and Thompson put up 55 tonight and the other guys jack their games up a little bit, they'll win the game.
Yeah, I agree. And you mentioned Iguodala. He's got a minor injury, too, that's been hampering him. So
yeah, it's called his shooting. My God. 1-6, 0-3 from the three-point line. I was looking for a saw. My God.
That's hilarious.
I'm just saying. I mean, I've been watching. Look at the NBA playoffs this year have been so unpredictable.
Really? Yes.
So unpredictable. They really have. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been kicking butt in baseball, but in basketball, in the last 5 games, I think I've won 2 of them. I've done good on the totals. I've done good on the show. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, let me just go over everything real quick. I'm getting ready to try to reach a milestone. By the way, Starling Marte just parked a 3-run over. This is only in the top of the third with nobody out. Atlanta 5, Pittsburgh 4. And I have Pittsburgh getting a run and a half, and you wonder why I look haggard, why I look like Steph Curry after a 45-minute game. But I am 189 games over 500, so I'm 11 away from a precious milestone, 200 nice. Over 500 with Vegas scores and odds, 24-12 with Bears Barroom, ladies and gentlemen.
Woo-hoo.
And I had San Diego last Monday night. They got the job done. 2-0-1 on Wednesday with Bears Barroom and Vegas scores and odds presents the Mike North advantage. So I'm doing great there. And on the odds couple, I went 2-2, including picking the Derby horse with my system once again. Took a long shot, 10-1.
Excellent.
Went over it with Aldo last week. He knows my system.
Mm-hmm.
Cashed in $22. I spent for every $14 I spent, I made $22.40, ladies and gentlemen.
Not
and
bad.
Then Aldo, if he had been with me from the very beginning of all this, some almost a year together now. He could have brought the banquet hall that the wedding's going to be at, to be honest with you. That's all I'm going to tell you. But it's been a good, good run, and I'm going to come up in about 10 minutes with the pick for the total of the Golden State-Toronto game.
Excellent, excellent. By the way, Mike...
I give you nothing but the best. You're good to me, Aldo. You've been kicking butt, man.
Well,
you're kicking butt.
This is show number 60 that we've done together. We're quickly approaching
100. But we've been together a long time, but we do a couple of shows a week now, so we're not quite a year yet.
That's right. Just remember, on Wednesdays, it is 3 p.m. Central. Vegas Scores and Odds presents the Mike North Advantage. In that show, Mike gives out three free picks for action later that day. It's at 3 p.m. Central, live here on Mixlr.com. If you haven't visited us on Mixlr, those of you listening on the podcast, all you have to do is type in Mixlr.com, and then in the search bar, hit in Bears Ballroom Radio Network, and then you will listen to our live programming. Give them your email. They will not sell it to anybody. You won't get any spam or anything like that. You give them your email, and you'll get alerts every time we are live here with the Mike North Advantage and other live shows. In fact, we've got
we've been having fun.
Oh,
we've been
gosh.
Having a good time, and we've been winning, too. We were 2-0-1 last Wednesday for the Vegas Scores and Odds show, so we were at the beginning of this whole gambling craze. It's all of a sudden... I've been doing it for 40 years, but it's a new thing. I don't understand it, you know, because a couple of politicians said, all right, go ahead, give them a cage, see what they can do. But it's really going to only get better in Bears Barroom, and we're getting the job done, Aldo and I, and I'll have that Golden State pick in about 10, 15 minutes.
All right, excellent. Now, let's talk a little football now, because the Chicago Bears had a historic weekend in that they celebrated their 100th anniversary at a Chicago suburb. Those of you who are out of town, it was in Rosemont, and participation was excellent. They got record crowds going in there, and they reunited so many former Chicago Bears. I mean, we're talking about Dick Butkus, and if unfortunately very frail-looking Gale Sayers, and all of the present-day Bears were there too, or a good majority of them. It was quite the celebration. Mike, what have you heard about the celebration, and give me your thoughts? I got a few follow-up
90%
questions.
90% good.
90%? Okay.
I'll give the Bears the credit. Great job. They said the venue, people saying the venue could have been bigger.
Mm-hmm.
There were lines all the way to Schiller Park. They weren't allowed to bring water in. But you know what?
Yes.
all in all the reports I got, the Bears, get some autograph confusion. But those things are hard. And you're bringing players in from all over the country. I'm not trying to cop a plea, believe me,
for
the Chicago Bears. But I thought they put together a good presentation. Good to see Ditka. Good to see Butkus and Ditka together with Singletary. Saw a lot of pictures on social media. Hampton, McMahon seemed to be a star there. It seemed like the current Bears took a back seat to the 85 Bears, which any Bear team will always do until they win the Super Bowl. And then the 85 Bears will always be the first. So they're always going to be legendary in this town. They're going to be like folk heroes, where the next Super Bowl team will not be as revered because they didn't break the chain of not winning anything since 1963. And that's what that 85 Bear team did, which has essentially set things up now. But I thought on Virginia McCaskey seemed very happy. She seems very, very alert. She knows her stuff, and the McCaskey family, I thought they did a pretty good job. Most people saying they wish they would have added at Soldier Field.
Yes, I was going to mention that to you. But before I bring that up, I want to play, because you just mentioned Virginia McCaskey. She of course, did multiple interviews during the weekend, which was great to see, because she is in... For a woman her age, I'm telling you, she is in great shape, moving around, very sharp and so forth. I got a clip from ABC7. She was asked about how she feels being not only the matriarch of the Chicago Bears, but also the matriarch of the NFL. And I think you're going to really find this response very interesting. Here it goes.
Pride is a word I try to avoid because... I'm in this position due to my inheritance. I haven't done anything to earn it. I still consider it a man's world, mm-hmm. and I'm very grateful to be involved as much as I am. I think it's a great privilege, and I have to make sure that I don't disappoint.
Mike, your impressions?
That's what I've always said. She inherited the team when Muggs Hamels died. That wasn't the plan. And the plan went awry. I wasn't a fan of hers at the beginning. I've never let gender dictate how I'm going to, whether I'm going to criticize somebody or whether I'm going to favor somebody. I think if you're bad at something, it shouldn't matter what you are. If you're in a position, it shouldn't matter what, if you're a female or a male. If you're bad, you're bad. If you're good, you're good. And I give her credit for admitting she's sort of like Queen Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
She inherited the position.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's done a lot since then just by being the matriarch of the Bears and by her dignity. And I'm not doing a flip-flop on the woman. On the woman. I respect her. I respect her age. And I respect her sharpness. And I respect her reality that she inherited the team. But I also respect the fact that she's had to make some moves, including she had to let go of her own son.
Mm-hmm.
She made some moves.
Yep.
They've also, she's the one that named Ted Phillips. Whether we think that Ted Phillips or whether I think he's good or not, all of a sudden things are working. And then they got Ryan Pace. And George McCaskey's become very more active than Michael was, and he seems to have more respect from the media than Michael did. Michael came at a bad time. So I'll give her all the credit in the world. And congratulations on the 100.
Yeah, I tell you, when I heard that soundbite, first of all, I found it to be very emotional. I think...
So did I. I'm very pleased with her response.
Yes.
She's saying something I said in 92, 93, 94.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's...
That she was given the golden goose.
Yes.
She didn't do anything. She inherited it.
Right.
So I used to say that's where the Lucky Sperm Club came.
That's right.
And she is a member.
Yeah.
And she basically just admitted it.
Right. Well, she didn't
done
basically,
a good
she
job,
did.
And the Bears are winning, and I don't care who owns the team. Just like this Ricketts deal.
Mm-hmm.
You think some guy in Northbrook, some father who's got three little kids, isn't going to take his kids to a Cub game, something he's wanted to his whole life, because the owner has a certain political view? People are out of their minds.
Right.
I never went to one game based on the owner. I've stayed away from one team based on the owner. But I don't stay away. I wouldn't stay away from the Cubs based on the father of the son. No way. I think that people got to take a step back, and I understand. But if everybody's supposed to feel that way, why isn't the park empty?
Correct.
Will Wrigley Field ever be empty?
Well, when they start losing, when they go through those years that we went through in the 60s, and the college coaches.
You know what? They've had some rough. You're right. We haven't had a rough time for a while.
Right.
But they still were drawn. Since Harry Carey.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one thing.
Not like when we were kids.
I'll tell you one thing. Just prior to this new generation of Cubs, when basically Theo came in and they tanked the first 3 or 4 years.
Right.
There were a number of season ticket holders.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
I didn't like it. I didn't like the fact that they were tanking that badly, you know, because the baseball that was out there was atrocious. And I know a number of season ticket holders and said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I cannot spend so much money and know for sure that this thing is going to get turned around. I don't have the patience for that, nor the money. So that's a tough
Sounds
call.
Sounds like the people that gave up their – I read the articles of the people that gave up their season tickets the year Jordan got drafted.
That's right. Now that was
And all of a sudden those tickets skyrocketed.
Oh, my
They were
gosh.
Worthless before Jordan,
oh.
You know. And all of a sudden, ba-boom.
Mm.
Now you can't even get into the second balcony for what they were paying for the aisle back in the day.
How true is that? Back
right.
Before Jordan, my brother and I would get on the Western Avenue bus and then walk up to the ticket window and buy two tickets to almost any seat in the house on the day of the game, minutes before tip off. Nowadays, you know, I don't think that's ever gonna happen again.
Oh yeah. I went to the International Amphitheater. I thought I was going to Da Nang. I mean, you know, I mean and we went to the game, and then I prayed. We're on the way home. And then I got home, and I clutched my parents like I'd been on an overseas trip.
That is hilarious. All right, there's so.
Remember the amphitheater?
Oh yeah, the Chicago Amphitheater, excellent venue for big rats.
Yeah, not at all friendly sometimes.
No, rats, the humankind, and the rodent kind.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Lots of interesting topics out of this Bears 100 celebration. I'm going to save some of them for future shows, but like for instance, one thing that Johnny Morris, good old Johnny Morris, a friend of yours, he said something that I want to pose this question to you. He was asked, who would you pick, Gale Sayers or Walter Payton? I'm going to let you answer, and then I'll share his response.
Okay. First, I saw Gale on the TV, and there's people that think he shouldn't have even come.
Yeah.
I'm glad he came. I was distressed by his look.
Oh, my goodness. So sad.
I've known Gale. I remember when... the score, when Payton died, the score said, well, who are we going to get for the Tuesday show? After all the dust had settled and Walter was gone, we said, and then there was one of the guys said, how about McMahon? Another guy said, how about Hampton? And I was going to host every show.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, how about Sayers? And at that time, Gale was an okay talker. And they said, well, he's not a good talker. I go, he's a better talker than McMahon at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see in when Gale took over for Walter and we went to those Hooter shows and people remember in Crystal Lake, in Lansing, in Schaumburg, in Park Ridge, on Higgins, mm-hmm. all those different places we went to with Gale. He was deliberate in his speech back then. I think he was getting the onset 15 years ago. Of something,
yeah.
But he always made it through. He did a great job, and to be honest with you, I think the Payton death opened it up for him again. People thought he died.
Yeah.
I told him this. People thought he died after Walter, you know, made the name for himself. Mm-hmm. Gale was just, you know, yesterday's newspaper, and then once Walter died, Gale became more prominent. Got the radio job, became more prominent with the NFL alumni, and he had, you know, in his businesses. So I was glad to see him there, but it was sad. It was good to see all the Bears there. And Johnny Morris is one of the great football players for pound for pound you'll ever see.
Yes. People don't know that about him.
He was 5'10", 170 pounds. He was a track champion out of Santa Clara, I believe. He ran a 9.500. This is in 1960s, folks.
Yes, he was super fast.
Yeah, and a tough guy.
Yep.
Good. To me, the number one anchor in Chicago sports TV history ever on TV.
Yeah.
Nobody will replace him. He was the first $1 million.
Sports anchor.
He was the first $1 million sports guy. And here's another thing. He got me, and he got the score. He liked me. We got along. He was a brash guy. I was a brash guy. I'd see him at the track every so often. But I haven't seen Johnny like I should. Mm-hmm. You know, he's always at the track. Yeah. So I'm going to have to go over there.
Yeah. They say that he's got a very special spot where he always sits at. So if you get over there, you'll probably find him. And now I got to ask you the question one more time. Now, he was asked to pick between if you had one player to pick.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sayers?
Yeah.
Sayers for a game and Payton for the season.
Ah, that's exactly what he said.
Get out of here.
I swear to you.
Get out of here.
I swear
because, you know, I've said that for 20 years.
Uh-huh.
Because Gale asked me. And I said, if I needed a full season, I couldn't go to you. If I need you for a game, kickoff returns, punts, passing, running for a game, we're going to win that game. But if we're going to use you for the season, you could get hurt. And he didn't like it. I said, Walter's more durable.
That's the fact.
He didn't miss a game.
Yeah.
So that's the way I didn't know Johnny answered it that way. Was that in the paper? Or was that in the quote that you got?
That was in the paper. I'll dig it up and send it to you.
Cool.
Oh, man.
Cool, because that's – but if I had to pick a guy, I'd go Walter.
Yeah. I'm with you 100%. And I love...
And I love Gail. Yes, exactly. But Walter is... I mean, it's the longevity in the way he ran.
Right. Well,
you know, I mean, Gail, you'll never see his likes again. But you know what? I would have loved to have seen him play in today's game. But Gail had some regrets. That knee injury set him back about 10 years where he was bitter for a while.
Mm-hmm. Ruined a tremendous career. And despite that, 6 years in the NFL, he still gets into the Pro Football
Unreal.
Hall of Fame. That is totally unreal. And again, it's just so sad to see. I saw photographs of him being wheeled out there, the Hall of Fame jacket, you know, basically draped his entire body. There was an article in The Athletic about his physical condition. It is just a really bad sight.
I got all the pictures of him from the sports magazines from 65.
Oh, really?
Cut out and in a box.
Nice.
When you were a kid, did you ever cut out pictures?
All the time.
Yeah. I cut out all my sports, anything, if he was in Sports Illustrated, Sports Magazine, if he was in any of the sports, Street and Smiths, him and Butkus, I got a box filled with cutouts of those guys. Hmm. I used to cut them out. I was in like 6th, 7th grade, man. Those were my guys.
Yeah.
Butkus and Sayers. That's why it was sad to see Gale, man.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you hate to see somebody in that shape.
Yeah.
And you know what? But in another way, it was fitting. Because when you think of great excellence at running back, you think of two Chicago Bears right off the bat. And one's got dementia now, and the other one's gone.
Yeah, so sad. So sad. All right, the last question I got for you on the 100, and I think what we'll do maybe every Monday night, we'll just talk Bears history for a little while because this is the 100th anniversary.
I love Bears history.
Yeah, and you're damn good at it, too. All right, sort of a morality question here. Highlights of Jay Cutler came up at the convention, and there was a torrent of boos from the audience. Do you think that was appropriate or not?
Yes. Fans are allowed. They paid their way. And if that was their reaction, see, the media protected them.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like you see it nowadays, whether it's politics, entertainment, sports, it doesn't matter. They have their favorites. And Cutler never took heat from the media. He took more from the fans. And that's the downfall of the media in this town over that span, that Jay Cutler was allowed to sneer and be a phony and fake hustle and not care. Just be a rat, a snot. And the fans do it. It's the media that never caught on. Period. And I knew it. Fans don't want to see a guy that doesn't care or doesn't give his all to win. And that's the attitude that he put forth. He was the face of the franchise. He was a mope. And he got booed. Did he show up?
No, he was not invited.
Jay Cutler wasn't invited?
No, Jay was not invited. Brian Urlacher chose not to show up, if I read this report correctly, and a number of other really good players were not invited. For instance, Thomas Jones, who's a friend of Bears Barroom and was the Super Bowl running back along with Cedric Benson, he was not invited, and I thought that was a huge slight because he really talks very highly of the Bears organization.
If you played for the Bears, whether you're Jay Cutler, Thomas Bell, who I loved.
Yeah.
Loved him as a running back. Was sick when they let him go. They played politics for that one, too.
Mm-hmm.
Then every Bear that played in a Bear uniform should have been there. I'd say that for Cutler, too. But if you want to boo him, boo him. I thought they booed him when he walked out.
Mm-hmm.
So no wonder. The fact that their golden boy for 10 years didn't show up just tells you all you need to know. Biggest mistake in Bear history, one of them. Biggest. For the money they spent.
One of these days, you and I will debate the Jay Cutler thing. I'm not as harsh on him. I don't.
Or you all want to have a long conversation if we talk about playoffs.
Oh, well. On that note, we'll end the show.
We got all the time in the world. You and I, we're running the walls. We don't care. You know, like, good for them, but it's good that they had it. I'm glad the Bears had it. I'm sorry everything didn't go smooth, but from what I heard, it was okay.
Yes.
I didn't have to stand in line, though.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, a number of barflies were there. They shot videotape. Greg Braggs was in the chat room.
I saw him there. Greg did a good job.
Oh, this guy, he needs to be hired by one of the professional
teams. He gets into the place. He walks in. He's taking pictures with everybody.
Exactly.
He's a celebrity. God bless him.
He is a celebrity. You know what?
Good guy.
He was at Bourbon A one day, and he's sitting down with the beat reporters, and he talks to them for a little while, and then he's getting up to go, and they ask him, where are you going? He goes, I can get better shots over there. I can get a better view over there. And the beat reporters just sat there on their asses while he went over and got great pictures. That's Greg Braggs.
Oh, yeah.
He's incredible.
The beat reporters are going, when's camp over with? That's what they're saying.
Exactly.
By the way, I got my game for tonight, if you want me to give it out.
Yes.
Last week, you shocked the living daylights out of me.
I did.
You had the Hugh Darvish prediction up there. I go, oh, my God, I hope it wins. And then it won. I go, Aldo's a genius. It won. I don't care what you do. I'm taking the under tonight in the Golden State game. It came in last time. I'm going to take it again this time, 216, with Durant back in the whole ball of wax. I think the defense, coupled with the fact that Golden State hasn't gotten a lot of open looks, is going to bring in the under again. They've had a couple overs, but they've had some unders, including last game.
Hey, before you go, Hart4803 just said, thank goodness the White Sox weren't mentioned in the show. I don't want to hear Mike's opinion on that. Ha, 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 ha. So,
how are they doing? Well, they're playing Kansas. Are they almost done with Kansas City? Because they own them.
They do.
They own the Kansas City Royals, don't they?
Yes, they do. They just don't own the Washington Nationals.
What's the record right now?
They are, what, 2 games under .500 again. They just can't
That's driving you absolutely crazy.
Oh, it's driving me nuts.
Because you got... You said they're going to be .500, and you know what? I'd be happy if they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? They're right there. They're right there. They're not that far away. They're playing. You know, Lopez, though, I still don't trust him. You know, the guy pitches 5 crap games. He has 1 good game, and everybody thinks he's Sandy Koufax. Let's see a couple more good games like we got out of Giolito. You know?
Yes, indeed. Man, oh, my gosh, I love
so there,
this
Tell Harp I already bet. Now the Sox are mentioned. We're doomed.
We're doomed indeed.
We're doomed.
Let me remind everybody listening live that I Have a Stream follows us. And this show will be up on Podcast Virgin in about 30 minutes. Please share it with those of you who follow you on Twitter. And let everybody know, Mike North Advantage, Monday nights, 7 p.m. and Wednesday, Vegas Scores and Odds presents the Mike North Advantage at 3 p.m. Central. Mike North, say goodbye to your friends.
So long, and thanks to Pete Caliendo. So long, everybody.